Welcome to the Radical Lifestyle Podcast, brought to you by Generation to Generation, where you will be inspired by the past, equipped for the present, and prepared for the future as we engage in conversations with people from around the world. Hello everyone, this is Andrew and Daphne from Generation to Generation, and our guest today is Jenny Daggereth. Jenny, for people that don't know who you are, can you just say a bit about where you're from and what you do?
Well, thanks for having me, Andrew and Daphne. So I live right outside San Antonio, Texas, in the United States. And what I do, I would say I have for the last 25 years just been, a mom, a homeschool mom. I've homeschooled for my four boys who are ages 25, 22. Well, I have a set of twins that are 25, 22 and 19. So they are now, as of now, completed with their homeschooling journey. We are still on our parenting journey, but I have spent the last 25 years of my life really dedicated to playing the role of wife, mother, and homeschool mom slash cheerleader.
You also teach within the homeschool community, don't you?
That is true. Yes, we for about the last 10 years we've been a part of a homeschool, an international homeschool group called Classical Conversations. And so as a part of that, I have taught not only my own children, but other people's children as well in like small groups.
So what are classical conversations?
Well, the classical part comes from an educational model that's based on classical learning and the classical learning style. The conversations part comes in that it's a really designed on the class day to be a conversation between the students with what they've been learning and engaging in, and me as like a facilitator, conversations between the students and their parents at home, which is the main goal, and just really kind of getting students to learn how to think, how to approach a subject, to learn it, how to take a different viewpoint and examine it graciously with truth in mind, how to communicate their point of view, things like that. Just really giving practice and having conversations as opposed to monologues or, you know, rants, whatever.
When you started doing this, I should think days like today were not even in the thinking, but I would think that in today's society, this is even more important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's so much about the way it was when we started versus the way it is now that is, it's, I would not say it's radically different, but it's definitely on its way to being different. We're seeing a lot of things that were sort of shadows of what might be someday, we're actually seeing today and seeing honestly the benefit of the approach that we've taken in raising our boys and in homeschooling. That's a little bit different. We're seeing the benefits and blessings of that. We know like this was the Lord that led that path because of where we are today. And I mean, 25 years goes in a blink, which I didn't believe when I was 25 years old. I didn't actually know how fast 25 years would go, but it does go very quickly. But I think even just the way times are and societies are now is, it's really headed towards a radical shift, and it's heading there quickly.
Very quickly. So you just mentioned twice, I think, the fact that you have four boys. I have one boy and three girls. Now, I would, you know, in my thinking, there's a lot of parenting that is parenting. But I think also if I had four boys, I think I would have had to be a different type of mom, a different interested in different things. And I don't know. So can we talk about what has it been like raising four boys? And I will add, they are amazing boys. young men now, really amazing. So I love to talk to people who've walked a path through the trials, through the good times, and the end result is pretty cool. So can you start by saying when you suddenly found you've got four boys,
twins. Was it sudden that you find out that you've got four boys?
Well, yes, because you suddenly found you've got number four, don't you?
Well, I guess it's...
Well, so, I mean, in the span of 6 years, we had four boys. So, yeah. I mean, that's kind of sudden.
I guess so.
So did you go through the thought process, oh my goodness, I've got four boys, or was it just fine with you and natural?
You know, I think when we had the twins, Jonathan and Jeremy, and they were both boys, that was kind of a shift, because I was just sure we were having girls. I just, you know, I only have a sister and a twin sister at that. So we didn't grow up with brothers. I thought I'm going to have girls. Almost all of our cousins were girls. I mean, like, boys really were not on the radar as far as, like, we're going to have boys. I don't know why. That just, you know, you just know what you live. And so when we had twin boys, it was a little bit of a shift when we found out we were having boys. But then when we had boy number three with Jeffrey, I was like, okay. Well, then when we got pregnant again, I was like, this one should probably be a boy. I don't think I'd want to be a girl showing up on the tail end of three big brothers. And so having never raised girls myself, I have three nieces and I, you know, I've been around girls. Our boys had friends who were girls, but I love having little boys. I mean, I honestly think God made me to have little boys, because it's the noise never bothered me and it's noisy. And, you know, just sort of, I don't know. I think and not just little boys, like toddler boys, it was exhausting, obviously. I think it's exhausting to have young children, no matter whether they're boys or girls. But I did see other little girls who would just sit quietly and play. And, you know, for moments I was like, oh, gee, that must be nice. You know? And then I had some other mothers who were like, trust me, like, you either pay the price when they're preschoolers or when they're teenagers. Like, it's, there's activity and just a different level of emotion on both sides either way. So we kind of found that to be true. I mean, there was a lot of activity and motion and dirt and noises and bumping up against each other just because you can. I mean, it just, like, boyness, I think, is just like just really the way boys are wired. I think in large part because of homeschooling, I know this isn't about homeschooling, but because we're able to spend so much time together as brothers and really focus on these are your brothers. These are God's gift to you, whether it feels today like it or not. They're your gift. They will be with you always, and they will be your best friends. I mean, that was just the way, that was the stance that we took, kind of like, it's not negotiable. I mean, some people might say that's, you know, taking that, I don't know. Some people would disagree, but we have found on the backside of it, they are best friends. And it was kind of worth sowing those seeds. And it wasn't like they always got along or anything like that. I mean, they are human, and, you know, Michael and I are human. But I think for the most part, I wouldn't do it any other way. I honestly would probably have 12 boys if I could. I mean, I love raising and maybe a couple of girls in there, but I figure, Lord willing, at some point I'll get four handpicked girls out of the deal and have some daughters-in-law and maybe some granddaughters or something. But
so you said, well, it's not about homeschooling, but many people would think, okay, so you've got these toddlers, 3 or 4 year olds, and they're boys, and they're jumping on each other and rolling and dashing around the house, doing whatever boys do. And then you say, you know what, we'll homeschool. Take me on the bridge that went from, my goodness, my home is full of activity, and you know what? We'll just keep this right in the house and we'll educate them. Take me on that journey.
That's kind of about how it went. Actually, before we even had children, we had sort of thrown around the idea of homeschooling. We had a couple of families in our little bitty church. I mean, really, as we look back, it was kind of amazing how the Lord was preparing us, because it was, homeschooling had just become legal in Texas when we were looking at homeschooling. And there in this, we were in just like a small Baptist church of about 100, 200 people. And there were like four families that homeschooled. So, I mean, statistically, it should not have been true, but that we kind of, it sort of planted the idea in our head of like, this could be something that we could do. And as our boys got older, as Jonathan and Jeremy were three when Jeffrey was born, and then Jeffrey was three when Josiah was born. And so as we kind of started into homeschooling, we sort of fumbled our way through it. I tried to do too much with a four-year-old while you're pregnant, or with a five-year-old while you're pregnant, and a six-year-old when you have a baby. I mean, you just sort of fumble your way through getting it done. But there is a point when Josiah was just a baby that we realized if we sent Jonathan and Jeremy to school, they would never know Josiah. They'd be gone all day long. They would not grow up with Josiah. And we saw how, because they were home, they were all in baby Josiah's face. I mean, they loved to read to him. They loved to pick him up and carry him. And Jeffrey too, he was just a toddler, but it was like, we were just doing life together. And so it's like, why would we want to send part of our family out to not do life while we do life without them? There was just really kind of a mind shift on, we're not just homeschooling because we feel like it's a better education, but we're homeschooling because we want to create a family culture and we do life together. So for a few hours a day, that's going to include some academics, and then like a very few hours a day when they were little. I mean, obviously a little bit more as they get older, but it really became more about creating our family culture and us doing life together as a family. And so that's really kind of like the bridge to where we didn't get there in 1 year. I mean, it took several years, but when we kind of made that shift and just decided, no, this is who we're going to be. Homeschooling was just a piece of us doing our life together and growing together as a family, ministering as a family, reaching out as a family, like laughing, crying, traveling, whatever. Like, we just want to do this as a family.
Yeah,
it's interesting. A lot of people, they go with the norm, which would be education, and they're figuring out who they want to be along the way while education is going on. Whereas it sounds like you all thought, what do we want to be? And then you looked for the way to make that happen. And mm-hmm. So it sounds like your primary focus was not on education. It was what do I want to see in my family? And then secondary was the education aspect.
Right. I think it evolved into that. When we very first started homeschooling, it was like, hey, I could do a better job than my local public school. I mean, like,
yeah,
because it's like kindergarten. Like, I can teach you how to read. I've already taught you how to tie your shoes, how to go to the bathroom, how to ride a bike. Like, I could teach you how. I mean, so it really started in the very early years as, you know, I think I could do a better job than that, but it quickly grew into, who do we want to be? And there was even a conversation one time I remember Michael and I had with kind of like looking forward, like who do we want our boys to be in 10 years? And we kind of came up with a list of things. And then we realized, okay, well, that means we actually have to be doing this every day for the next 10 years. They're not just going to automatically show up 10 years from now like this, unless we're intentional about sewing into that every day for the next 10 years. I mean, obviously not every single solitary day, but as a rule, we're sewing into that. And that, I mean, just conversations and things like that, I think really cemented for us and for our family that that homeschooling had to be a part of it. But the educational part of homeschooling was only really a fraction of homeschooling.
Well, it depends what you think education is, doesn't it?
Right.
So, I mean, you probably had education 24/7, except when they were asleep sort of thing, but it just...
Exactly.
Looks different. Exactly. So I've often...
I was just going to say, it's interesting as well, you saying about, you know, who do you want to be? I mean, we live in a time now where you mentioned earlier on that the times we're living in are radically shifting.
Yeah.
And so I know there's a lot more awareness of homeschooling, people considering it. And I think it's an interesting question for people listening to ponder if they've got families, if they've got small kids, you know, what to consider. What do you want to see your kids looking like in 10 years time? And then saying, is the current education system the best way to see that happen or not? So it's an interesting question for people to ponder that are listening.
And that will vary from place to place. Yeah. And many different countries, I mean, are listening to this. And some, of course, homeschooling is not an option. But it,
right.
But sometimes it is an option. There's a way around it.
And there's ways to be intentional to see what you would like to see in your kids in the future happen. There's just other ways of having to do
that. And I know in some countries they think it's not possible, but you can take on a journey to making it possible. I mean, if anybody wants to contact Jenny about this, we can maybe put some details down below. So going back to the boys, I've heard it said that the primary role model in a child's life is the same-sex parent. So where did you fit in this? Because you've got all these boys and you're homeschooling them, and their primary role model is not you. How did you see your role in this?
Yeah, that's really interesting. And there have been a number of times when Michael has kind of pulled me aside and said, hey, listen, they don't need two dads. They don't need two moms. They need one mom and one dad. Like, kind of very graciously, like, stay in your lane, you know, like let me be dad to them, because that's actually what they need to see. They don't. And we actually see that a lot in a homeschool community. A lot of boys, because they're mostly raised, spend most of their hours around mom. It's like it is hard to, you know, intentionally not turn them into girls or to treat them like a girl or to expect them to respond like a girl, right? And so I'm very grateful for Michael, who was very intentional as they were growing up, to do like boy things with them. And I just didn't. I wasn't the one that would take them camping or teach them how to mow the lawn or I don't want to say, like, you know what I mean by boy things and girl things. I'm not saying girls can't go camping. I like camping, sort of. But there's characteristics of being a young man that I think I did have to step aside and let Michael teach them those things and show them those things. And, you know, we tried to be as intentional as we could about just having Michael would take them out every week for coffee and just sort of like talk to them, sometimes take them on trips by themselves. I mean, just, he really was intentional about playing that role, especially, you know, once they got above like age 3 or 4. I mean, I think for, you know, in those infant toddler years, it's hard for it to not be mom. who's the primary caregiver, because that just sort of mom's the one who does that. But then I had to be very intentional about letting them go do things with dad when they were ready, or when Michael felt like they were ready. So
can you give us an example of when, any example, when he had to say, come on, Jenny, stay in lane? What would be the thing that he felt that you were crossing over into the out of lane?
So I think there, one example I remember for sure was when they were playing football, or American football, when they were in junior high or high school. And I can't even remember which boy it was, but he didn't do well, and he was just like upset, and you know, and Michael just, it sort of went like, you know, Michael said, well, yeah, you're right. I mean, you should have done this, and that, you know, that cost your team or whatever. I mean, he just was like talking to them, and I was like, do you think you're being a little harsh? Like, I just, that just the way he was speaking to them was very, in my mind, very harsh. And that's when he said, listen, they don't need two moms. You can console them, and that's fine, but they need somebody to sort of shoot straight with them. It's not offensive to them like it feels offensive to you. And I was like, all right, I'm going to have to try. And then the boys would be like, yeah, mom, you know, he's right. Like, I'm like, okay. So
that is,
if you say so, like, I'd have my feelings hurt if you talk to me that way. But they were like, no, it's what I needed to hear, mom. So,
well, that is man talking. That is a man talking to the adult man that is within the boys, isn't it?
Yes.
Wow, that is interesting. Yeah. Keep in your lane. That is a really, really interesting phrase. So how much, I mean, obviously I shouldn't think you just completely disengage from that part of their life. I mean, your boys are all sporty. They're all, I mean, they are real men, as it were, out camping and trekking and going to what. How much have you engaged with that? And what has your role been in engaging with it?
I think it has been more of a sideline role, but I still want them to know, like, I totally support you. Like, I didn't coach their football team. I showed up on Friday night. I drove them to practice, you know, that kind of thing. Or if they go camping or hiking, like, or hunting or whatever, like, I don't go. I just cheer them on. But some of it's because I don't love doing some of those things, but for the things, there are just a number of times where it's like, I want to be with you, so I'll go do what you like to do, because I think there is still a role, though the father may be the primary influence, there is still such a role for a mother, and for, because I'm also showing them kind of what to look for in a spouse.
Yeah.
Right. Kind of modeling. You want a spouse who doesn't just say, hey, that's your thing, that's my thing, you go do your thing, I'll do my thing, and we'll meet up in 5 years or whatever. I mean, it's like, you want, there needs to be some collaboration, some support. Like, sometimes we do these things together. So it sort of morphed more into like that support. And also even just connecting to them on a heart level in a way that's much easier for me than it is for Michael. I mean, just because generally it's easier for women to connect at a heart and emotional level, and giving them an outlet to be able to open up and kind of share how they're feeling, and just have some other perspective. And it's not that they couldn't share what they were feeling with Michael, and they did sometimes, but it's just different. I'm going to ask different questions. I'm going to kind of draw different things out of them. And yeah, you know, it also helps them learn how to relate to a girl, because I am actually one of the only girls or women that they, in the for long term, have learned how to relate to until they got now they've gotten older. There's more opportunities to kind of see other women, but
yeah, I was going to come on to that really, because if you've got a household of boys and you've got a dad and they're, you know, very much into what, I mean, I say this guardly, stereotypically think of boys. I mean, they just are. They're just out there playing sports. They're doing all things that I would think, oh yeah, they're real boys. I mean, not that the others aren't, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Then, but they do live in a world where there are women, where right. there are females. And so you've got to be able to relate in a healthy way to girls in general, women in general, et cetera, et cetera. So would you see that your role was very much in saying, but I'm a woman, I mean, not in words, but I'm a woman, and this is how you address me, this is how I expect to be spoken to, this is how I'm feeling, this is, and so their connection with you is, and will continue to be down the line, a kind of role model and reflection of what you're looking for them?
Right, absolutely. And, you know, this, the Lord has just been so faithful to provide us with families as they were growing up who had girls that we were close with. So they got to spend time with girls. And so, and just kind of to learn how, like, even as an 8, 10, 12 year old, like, oh yeah, girls really do think differently. That's okay. That's, it's not like she's a crazy girl. She's just a girl. Like, that's just the way a girl thinks. And in a, you know, as we were homeschooling and growing up, and as a part of classical conversations, obviously they got to be friends with a lot of girls and have a lot of conversations with girls who were their same age. And then we'd come home and kind of talk about how the conversations went. And so they've, it's not like, even though we homeschooled, that it was only the six of us. And they never saw another woman unless we went to the grocery store or something. I mean, yeah. they did life with a lot of girls their age, some a little bit older, some a little bit younger, you know. So I think, but I think kind of all through that, it has been our role as parents and my role as a mom specifically to sort of show them, you know, and talk to them about how did she respond, how should you respond when she responds this way? Or, you know, Michael has even, you know, if we're out somewhere, he's like, okay, do you see those girls over there? You know, kind of pay attention. What's their body language like? What's, you know, at some of them, he's like, I can look at them and tell you right now, those girls are trouble. You know, so you might, so he, and here's why I say that. And, you know, just kind of training them as much as we can. Obviously we do what we can, and then the Lord does all that we can't, but just in modeling and showing them and giving them opportunities to be around other girls. And it's sometimes just funny to even hear the four of them talking together when they don't know we're listening, to kind of the observations of girls or girls in different situations, or, you know, this is what I, you know, I like this about this girl, or I'm not sure about this girl, or that kind of thing. Because yeah. They are still boys and they still like to talk about girls.
Well, totally. they don't talk there. You don't know what's going on inside them, do you?
Right.
So as they got into teenage years, which I never think of teenagers being a challenge any more than parenting is a challenge, but it's another phase. It's another phase that you're walking into with them. They don't do it without you. You're going into it with them, and you're trying to stay ahead of the game and that sort of thing. How did you see them walking through the teenagers with all the dynamics that start emerging? With them kind of coming into their manhood and wanting to be the man, and yet, you know, they're still not quite there. Mm-hmm. How was that for you with four of them going through it? Boom, boom, boom.
You know, I think I remember when I was growing up, my mom had said, you know, she's like, I always heard teenagers were terrible and there'd be a whole season that I wouldn't even like you. And she's like, I decided when you guys were 10, that just wasn't going to be true. I was just going to like you the whole way through. and it really kind of stuck with me. So I was like, all right, okay, that's good. So that we sort of went into, like, when we were headed into the teenage years, thinking, why not that? Like, if you look in the Bible, there's actually nowhere in the Bible where it says this is what to expect from your teenager. Actually, teenager's not actually in the Bible, but you're either a child or you're a young man or young woman, right? So the whole concept of teenagerness is a modern concept. And so when our boys were young, we really kind of started to understand that. And so our expectations going into it were that it's more of like a shift than like a cataclysmic event. Things will change, things will shift. Now, all that being said, it wasn't easy. It was because there is so much of the way that we raised them when they were younger and kind of, it's like you're just getting into the groove of how we relate, how we train you, how we do our life with you guys all as young boys. And then like somebody throws a wrench in it, like, wait, now you think you want to be an adult? Like, no, let's go back to like when mom and dad say you obey with a smile right away, you know, like, let's go back to that. But I think we were, I don't know, maybe you could say as prepared as we could have been, because we didn't know a lot of people who had done what we were doing heading into the teenage years, homeschooling. We certainly didn't know anybody who had kind of come out the other side with and said, oh yeah, we still really love our boys. And so we were really just kind of doing the next thing like the Lord had put on our hearts. And we didn't do it all well for Jonathan and Jeremy. We did better by the time we got to Josiah. We kind of knew what was coming. We knew what to expect. Jeffrey was kind of tossed in the middle of the, and some of it even is just the personalities of your children. Like, yeah, there's four, but it's not like it's four of Jonathan. So by the time you get through time number four, hey, you're really good at this. It's not like an equal repetition. It's everybody's different. The way they respond are different. But I think by the time we got to Josiah, it was like, we understood this is what's going on and we need to shift more towards asking questions to kind of get to the heart of things. We need to give them some rope, if you will, to kind of like make their own decisions. And that was much harder for me as the mom than it was for Michael as the dad. I for sure, that's true. And I think that was a big step for me in having to defer to Michael to know this one we need to let them to make that choice on. We need to give them rope to make that choice. And I'm like, they're going to like hang themselves. And he said, then that's what will happen. I mean, like they still live at our house. We can still make the choice. I mean, we can still be kind of here to help them recover from that choice if it's a bad one, you know? So I think, so it's just a growing into, and he recognized even more than me, I think we have to do these things to let them grow into young men. And I was just like, I liked the little boy. And some of it, honestly, is like, I liked the more of the control that I could have over little boys. Like, you eat what I say, you eat, you wear what I've put out for you, or, you know, I teach you all these things. It really honestly is kind of a control, and you don't want to see them make mistakes, and they do. And you're there to pick up the pieces. So.
And a woman is more nurturing, aren't they?
Absolutely.
So it's like, I'm here to nurture you, care for you, be, you know, which is in a man, but it's not maybe the primary characteristic. So when you find your nurturing is beginning, the amount of nurturing you're doing is getting less and less. So you have to find, well, so where am I in this?
And of course, and not only is it getting less and less, but the more and more I do it, the more and more they resent me for it.
Yeah.
Like, they need to be able to grow into men. They don't need a mom the same way, the same way that they did when they were 8. They don't need me doing that for them. And it's actually kind of more harmful to our relationship if they feel like, mom, like, oh my gosh, let me do it. And I'm just trying to be loving and nurturing and all of that. So it actually could tend to, and we had to walk through that too, to do more harm than good if I try to react and nurture and control them the same. I don't want to say, it's not like I was controlling when they were young, but I was just in control of so many of their decisions. And I had to be willing to open my hands and let them develop into who God made them to be, and trust that God was doing the work in them.
So let's go back. Then you've got Michael's and your relationship. And so Michael being, I don't like this saying that like that, that's it, but it is standard. He's the primary role model in their lives. Mm-hmm. How important do you think Michael has been in the lives of the boys in knowing how to relate to women in general?
I think he's been huge and key. I think he has recognized that because, and really been intentional about treating me the way that he knows that women should be treated, and the boys see it. And I think for a lot of years, they just assumed that's the way men treat women. And so it's not been until they've kind of seen more men and women that they realize, okay, that's not standard. I mean, it should be, but it's not. I mean, the dad was actually being very intentional about the way he related to me, and he was intentional about sharing with them, like I said before, like, here's the way you speak to a woman. And sometimes it wasn't even overt like that, but just demonstrating for them. And it also wasn't just Michael. We also surrounded them, the Lord provided, and we're so grateful that he did, other men who were saying the same things and modeling the same choices and things like that. So, but Michael is really huge in demonstrating for them what a godly man looks like. But I also know if Michael had not been in the picture, I mean, the Lord is so faithful to bring men in to play that role. And I know like even Michael has felt very, he's intentionally been that for some other ladies and other families who don't have a dad in the picture. So it's not like, if I don't have a husband who's doing this for my boys, then it will never happen, because the Lord will provide a way to make that happen. But for our family, thankfully he did. And he was very intentional and a very strong role model for the boys about what that looks like.
Yeah, that word that you keep on saying, intentional, intentional, intentional. These things don't just happen. You can't just sort of drift through life and then at the end when they're in their 20s and 30s and go, well, how did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, And I just love going back to what you said at the beginning. You had a vision for what you wanted for your boys. So you knew where you were heading. You knew where you wanted to head. I mean, your vision didn't say, well, I want them all to be pilots or something like that. It wasn't that sort of vision. It was a vision of the type of men you wanted them to be. So what was that vision? Talk to us a bit about the vision that you had for your boys.
I think... I can't even remember how old the boys were, but I remember I was reading through in 1 Samuel, and I just read like this little snippet of a phrase. It was talking about right as Saul had been anointed king by Samuel. And it says that Saul went back to his house and men went with him who were men of valor whose hearts God had touched. And I was like, that's it. That's what I want. I mean, that just that phrase has just stuck with me for decades, you know, of that's what we want is men of valor whose hearts God has touched. I mean, so kind of in a broad sense, that's what we wanted. But just when they were young, we would just talk about character. And we had like this book of character qualities, and there was like an animal attached to it. So we talked to them about loyalty and dependence and perseverance and things like that. So we were very intentional about wanting them to be boys of character. So because then it's kind of like it doesn't really matter what occupation you're doing or even what hobby you're pursuing, like if you have character, like then the Lord will take you all kinds of places. So we wanted them to have strong character in the Lord. We wanted them to be like in that verse, for them to have hearts that were touched by God. We wanted them to be passionate for Jesus. And to really have a passionate love relationship and following the Lamb wherever he goes, only doing what they see the Father doing, only saying what they see the Father saying. I mean, so we would just talk to them about that and kind of what does that look like and how, you know, just on a day-to-day basis, you know, and then we also wanted them to be generous, you know, care for like missionaries, mission-minded. We read stories for years and years. We would read stories about missionaries and we'd pray for missionaries every day. We had like this big flip chart in our homeschool, and on Monday, we'd pray for certain missionaries. On Tuesday, we pray for certain missionaries. And then we actually met missionaries like you guys. and we would have missionaries into our home to stay. And so it was just, because we wanted them to value the work of God on the earth, honestly, even not just missionaries as people, but what is God up to on the earth? And here's people that don't live in Tennessee or they don't live in Texas, and they're doing God's business in other parts of the earth where we can't go, you know? So we really just wanted them to honestly, to be boys and men of character who loved Jesus. And then were just about his business, whatever.
I'm going to say some things that you wouldn't say. I'm sure you wouldn't say. So I know your boys. All four of your boys, some I know better than others, but I know all your boys and I've known them for many, many years. And I can say that your vision and what you aimed for may not have come out in its total perfection, but oh boy, has it come out. Your boys are, or your young men now are young men of valor and whose hearts the Lord touches. I see it in them. And I'm talking about my relationship with them now, which is obviously my baseline, of them being teachable, of them being able to communicate and say where they're at. They're very self-aware. They do have character. The way they've treated me is exemplary for young men. I mean, even when they were 7, 8, 9, 10, they treated me like a woman. They didn't just treat me like anybody, you know, didn't just, I wasn't just a friend. I was a woman who was a friend, and they knew how to treat me and to treat me well. And so I can only say, you know, I know you would say, and none of us are the perfect parent. None of us were raised by the perfect parent. But I do honor you, Jenny. I honor you, and I honor Michael for the way that you've raised these boys. And, you know, if I'd had four boys and I was younger than you, I'd be certainly following in your trail and saying, tell me how. So, you know, people are listening to us across the world, and some may be raising one boy, some may be raising three or four boys. Some of them may be saying, I don't know how to do this. What would you say to them? They're listening now. What would you say to them?
If you, even though you don't know how to do it, like, there is someone who does know how to do it. And I think one of the most important things is to really learn how to lean in and listen to what the Lord is saying, and then ask him to bring people across your path who can help you with the day-to-day nitty-gritty. I mean, there have been books that have come across our path at just the right time that have been just huge in helping us to know how to navigate one certain thing. And but they're all based in the scripture. Like, it all is. So even if you don't have a book, you have the book and the Holy Spirit. Like, he really, really will help you and guide you. And if you feel like there's not a man in my life, well, Jesus said he would be the father to the fatherless. So even if you feel like you have nothing and you're not equipped, it's like there's actually really good news, because there is someone who is ultimately equipped, who really knows not just your heart, but the heart of your children. And as you sit humbly with him and open your hands and let him, because it's not all happy news, because you don't realize how selfish you are until you get married, until you have children. Like, and you don't always know what's truly in your heart that's shaping the way you're relating to your children, but the Lord knows. And he really will encourage you and teach you. He's promised that he will. So oftentimes he's also very gracious to bring alongside somebody to help you and walk you in that time. But even if you're in a season where there's not a person or a book, or it's just, you feel like it's just you and your children, like, the Holy Spirit really, really is enough to guide you and help you. When you just ask for help, he wants, I mean, like, if I want for my boys to be men of valor whose hearts God has touched, I mean, how much more does he? Like, he's created them for that and for that relationship. So I would say it's not just like a kind of super spiritual answer, but like, really lean into the Lord. He really knows what you and your family and your children need, and pray for your children.
Mm. Yeah, I think this is probably the least I've spoken during a podcast. I thought I'd sit back and let the mums have this dialogue. It's interesting to listen to. And, you know, I listened to you talking about the characteristics that you wanted to see in your boys. And we now live in a time where so many of those characteristics are now frowned on. Growing up with a biblical perspective to be people that respect women and you know, is chivalry dead, for example? And, you know, but I appreciate, and obviously we would disagree with all that stuff, we agree with the way you've raised them, and so I appreciate that the way you were raising them, you were raising them to be that in a time where it is frowned upon. But I appreciate that all of your boys are, that they all have the character to be able to stand and be people during this time where other people may say, I don't like the way you were raised, I don't like the people that you've turned out to be. I appreciate that they're all boys that will stand up still for truth. They will still stand up to be lights in an ever-increasing dark world. And And be examples to other people around them and help other people around them to also stand for truth, to stand for what's right when everyone else is saying that actually all these other things that are wrong are right. So I appreciate that. I appreciate you and Michael. We love you. We love your family. Hopefully we will get to see you all at some point soon. if this...
airplanes,
if this virus will let us all start traveling around again and planes can start flying, that would be great. But thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us, to my mum mostly, to my co-host, but thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Jenny.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If it inspired you, please rate us and subscribe on Apple or Google Podcasts, Spotify, or another podcast platform.